Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and we're into the second month of 2021. I'm thankful to see that COVID seems to be trending in the right direction this time, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that we can get businesses opened up again before it's too late. Personally, things have been going well so far this year, and I'm grateful that the podcast and vapes are continuing to build some steam. If you have any suggestions for topics or guests, though, I do listen to the listeners, so please email me from our website or contact me on Twitter at Awaken Exchanges. I hope to have a full, diverse, and interesting schedule this year, so keep joining us here for the exchange. I'm not going to get much into politics this week. Personally, I'm just happy that things seem to be getting quieter on that front again. Maybe the Capitol riot was actually a wake-up call that made people realize what we don't want to see in this country. Here's to finding a way that we can come together, hopefully behind a unified Unity 2024, now that we have time to do the concept justice. As for other things this week, I have to at least mention my fascination with Redditors breaking the financial markets. They've taken GameStop and Dogecoin skyrocketing, and it's looking like they're trying to do the same with AMC and a handful of others as well. I would love to see the internet save GameStop and AMC, all while making themselves some money and forcing Wall Street shorters to lose a little bit. Seems a little poetic that the little guys are starting to learn that we can make some noise and remind the 1% that we all deserve a little consideration as well. I totally miss going out to theaters, but I don't know if they're going to come back in full force. Ready Player One level virtual reality could theoretically be coming for real this decade, and that would bring a personal theater to everyone's headset. It seems inevitable that streaming is the future, but maybe AMC can have a big bang of a decade until we get there. Maybe with all this backing, they can actually find a way to pivot into the new virtual market during that decade as well. Who knows? As for Dogecoin, I would love to see it hit a dollar this year, but I don't know how likely that is. Doge has a ton of internet support, and the blockchain is based on the same foundation that underlies Litecoin. I'll be holding on to mine and seeing what the future brings. And with regulation changes coming this year, I'm definitely starting to sniff around the cannabis stocks again to find out which companies might actually gain some traction through quality and not just quantity. That actually segues nicely into this week's interview. Adam Bush is one of the owners of Archive here in Portland. Archive is one of the brands that has made quality over quantity a priority over the last few years. While their quantity is not lacking either, their focus on good genetics and breeding quality has made them a sought-after brand all over the state of Oregon. Archive's flagship shop here in Portland is now a destination for cannabis enthusiasts from all over. Adam's enthusiasm is contagious, even when talking about some of the other amazing hash rosin makers here in the state. He has a passion for cannabis and a humble attitude that has brought him a long way thus far. I want to thank him for coming on to the exchange and sharing a great conversation with me. Before we get to the interview, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. First off, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep providing the best content that I can. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please take a look at our Patreon page, where you will get access to exclusive content and deals. As for our other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only high-terpene vape products since 2019. Get ready for our Delta 8 cartridges finally coming out here soon. As for Genesis Farms, they've been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other fantastic products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on YouTube, or follow us wherever else you're listening, and please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products, made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just the beginning of what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state. Their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner coming back for more. Find them on Facebook and Instagram and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges. It's episode number 3. The Caramel Corn Company is bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be, made with premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches and completely gluten-free. Their flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, spicy sriracha, white morsel macadamia, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, chocolate drizzle and raspberry caramel apple. I can't say enough about how delicious this caramel corn is. It makes a great gift any time of the year. You can find them for sale in Portland area market of choice locations, and hopefully again online soon when they get stocked back up. Please visit www.caramelcorncompany.com for more information today. And remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community. Last but not least, Awakened Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vapes since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no prescribed pills helped alleviate the symptoms. Having only tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. Despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis with COVID, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our 3 varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with the custom blended effect profiles. Check back at www.awakenedvapes.com for any updates, and you can always email us about wholesaling or white labeling opportunities. Welcome to Awakened Exchanges. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. But for those in our audience who are unfamiliar with you, why don't you tell us your name and a little bit about what you do?
My name's Adam Bush. Most of my friends call me Biff. I'm one of the owners of Archive here in Portland, and I run the whole garden side and hash side of Archive in Oregon.
Archive has a pretty big name at this point in the cannabis industry, but how did you first get into cannabis?
At an earlier age, you know, in high school, just smoking really shitty joints of Mexi weed for, you know, growing up in rural Virginia, we didn't have a ton of good weed out there. And, then I just started selling weed through high school and on through that. And, it just kind of blossomed from there. Fletcher, who started Archive Seed Bank, we both grew up in the same small town in Virginia. So when I moved west, he was already out here, and kind of just started, hanging out a little bit more again. And then when all the rec stuff happened, it all just kind of started falling into place that we would open Archive down here in Oregon just because of how much easier it was to get a license and get established here than it was in Washington.
So with your friend Fletcher, was he the impetus to start the pheno hunting and all the...
Yeah, Fletcher started Archive Seed Bank before we did anything here in Oregon. And so, yeah, he had made a line of seeds. It didn't get a lot of traction. And then he made another line of seeds, which, the do-si-do came from that. And then was kind of the jump-off point for Archive at that point. We started getting a little more notoriety, or he did, and everything. And so once High Times Cups started popping up and everything, when he was going to Venn there, I would just, tag along and help him out, because it gets kind of crazy at those booths.
Oh, yeah. So Do you have that same kind of drive for pheno hunting or?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, for us, it's a vital part to keeping us relevant. It's, you know, he is working on all sorts of things for Archive Seed Bank for the greater picture of everything. And we're kind of just more focused here in Oregon because the Oregon market is a little different than the, you know, national market and things like that. So
how so?
Oregon's a little behind in times, I feel.
Really?
You know, like I think that you have like the handful of people who, you know, are on the try to be on the cutting edge or like be on the hype train of like all this new stuff and everything. But it takes the majority of the people, the consumers that, you know, are going to the stores here in town a little bit to catch up. It's kind of trending more and more towards riding all the hype stuff, you know. But when it first started out, it was people wanted to smoke things they knew. Like when we first started putting things on the market that we had made and no one had ever heard of it, they were harder to sell. Then if we were to just grow a bunch of Blue Dream, people were buying it up left and right.
Because they'd heard the name.
Name recognition.
Yeah.
It's an emerging market. It's new to a lot of people. So unless you're on Instagram all the time or old weed forums back in the day, Archive wasn't necessarily a household name when it first came out.
All right. So when you guys first started producing your own strains, you said Do-Si-Do came from that second round. What other strains have you guys developed over the years? What are your most known ones?
I mean, here in Oregon, Rude Boy was one of the like first things that we started carrying that at our store and releasing the different clones of that we had that really gained a lot of traction. I would say I was obviously all the Do-Si hybrid. So any like the face off stuff that came from that line that Fletch made was pretty, you know, influential out the gate. And then, so like, you know, here in Oregon, really the Do-Si-Do, the duct tape, any face off hybrids, but the Rude Boy, the duct tape and the Do-Si were kind of like what got us, I think, kind of in, you know, in people's brain. And
I know a lot of people who still say duct tape is their favorite.
I mean, it's a workhorse of a plant. Like if I, you know, like there's nothing in my garden that produces more than that duct tape pheno that we released at the store.
So what do you look for in a phenotype when you're choosing it?
I mean, there's so many things. If I'm looking for it for myself, I just want it to taste good. Like that's my, you know, like all I'm really worried about. But then it depends on if I'm pheno hunting things for hash, then, you know, the resin has to be a little bit more dry. It has to wash really well. I don't really care what it looks like because I'm going to cut the whole plant down and freeze it anyways. Now when it comes to flower, it's, you know, a lot of things, you know, production yield is a big one if it's a commercial strain. But for us, realistically, when I'm looking for stuff personally, it's all based on flavor. I don't care about yield or anything at that point.
We were talking about the market earlier, and customers the only thing besides name recognition that would be driving that seems to be THC percentage.
Yeah, and that's something that we've never really cared about at the store, you know?
Like, that's what I was going to ask about.
It's on everything as mandated by the state and whatnot, and it's on like our scrolling menu, but we try really, really hard not to push that as a deciding factor because, I mean, 17% OG gets me just as stoned as some 30% cookie hype bullshit.
I think the 30% cookie hype, for the most part, you know, gets you really stoned really fast and then goes away and you forget any of it. I mean, yeah. It doesn't have any lasting effect.
Like, I mean, and then if it doesn't taste good, I don't even care. It's like I could be as stoned as I can possibly be, but if it didn't taste good, it's like I'm probably not going to go back.
Something I always tell people is the nose knows. If you smell that terpene, if that's something that you like, then your body wants that.
For sure. I mean, no, like, obviously, first thing is with your eyes. Every time you walk in, you see anything, you're gravitated towards something based on the appearance out the gate. But yeah, if it looks pretty and doesn't smell good, I have no interest in it.
So you think that other markets are more driven by the terpene profiles and things like that at this point?
I think so, yeah. certain markets. So you know what I'm saying? It's like different things appeal to different people at all times. Obviously, I still think that buying with your eyes is, the most prominent thing for people. THC percentage, is it purple? Is it frosty? Did some rapper talk about it in a song or something? that type of thing. Where it's like I love Skittles. I love the taste of Skittles. I love, it's probably one of the ugliest pieces of weed that you'll ever grow. A plant sucks to grow. It doesn't look good. It never fully dries out completely, but the flavor of it to me is awesome.
I know that's one you guys have kept around for a while, right?
Yeah, we got it, and that's the worn parts of the Moonbow. So Moonbow right now is that's the only thing I have in my house that I smoke. We monocrop multiple rooms of just Moonbow.
That Moonbow is delicious. Both 99 and 112.
Yeah. Though I personally like the 112 a little more.
You want to tell people the difference between the two?
The 112 leans a little bit more to the Skittles side of it, where the 99 is almost like a little more gassy, sour diesel kind of thing. The 99 grows better, produces better.
Yeah, of course it does.
all of those things. But the 112 to me is just my personal favorite.
I agree. I like the 99, but I'm not a big fan of the diesels and the gases. Yeah. So it's not the top of my list. That 112 I can just smoke all day.
Yeah, the 112 is pretty special. They both are, It took a while to find those things for sure.
So how did you cultivate those? How did you get...
A lot of work. Went through just over 500 seeds to find all of those.
Wow.
It took about 2 years to really go through everything, kind of select it down. And then we ended up keeping five different Moonbow phenos. The 99, the 112 were the standouts. The 75 was a little more Skittles leaning, but it tasted really awesome. Mm. Produces amazing hash, but not very much of it. The plant doesn't grow very well.
So then that weeds it out of further production.
And yeah, because it's at that point we're picking phenos for commercial production on our side.
It's not your home grow at that point. Yeah,
It's like, all right, that hash is great, but it's only 3% return and the yields suck. So it's like, I don't want to throw it away. And so, a lot of the new Moonbow hybrids that are coming out were all 75 reversals. So kind of kept that, it's like a better Skittles plant realistically. And so trying to just get the flavor to come through as opposed to the plant structure. That's a little tricky.
So when you guys are growing, you have everything very dialed in from what I can tell.
I mean, we like to think so for sure.
Not a whole lot is left to chance. What kind of lights do you use and flower? Is there any?
We use all Lux 1000 watt HPS lights. We don't do mixed spectrum or anything fancy like that. Or I guess it's not that fancy. We just don't do it. We grew in Rockwool forever and ever and have just recently shifted over, grew in Coco forever and ever and just recently shifted over all production to Rockwool.
How's the change been for you? Because that was, Coco is more what I know.
I like Rockwool a lot more.
Really?
It's more controllable in the sense of your drybacks and what you're feeding it. You don't have as much pH swing in the media of that and everything. So it's definitely, got a lot of pros and a lot of cons. You have to be a little bit more on it, with Coco being a little bit more forgiving with your drybacks and things like that, but it also will hold on to salts a little bit longer.
Well, with you guys, like I said, being so dialed in, you don't need as much forgiveness with the Coco at this point.
Yeah. And really for us right now, it's just finally kind of understanding how to irrigate plants properly. I think for the long time we were overwatering or underwatering at certain times, and we put a bunch of Arroya sensors into the whole facility, and that's really helped us just have a visual on the dryback periods, when we're watering, how to water, and all of that stuff. So it's just kind of helping us tighten up the things that we knew, just helping us put them in the right time, the right place.
So Archive was has really been known for its flower and genetics, but you also offer a lot of different types of materials or products now on the market.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, it started out as, you know, obviously genetics being our backbone behind the whole thing. And then with the flower production here, we kind of grew that following. And then like a year and a half ago, maybe we started selling recreational hash. Like, we were making hash before when it was medical, and we were like some of the first people to have rosin in the state. And then didn't have a license for a while, and then I acquired a license. And so that's really catapulted a lot of things. Like, we're you know, I'd say almost 50-50 right now in production of concentrates to flower.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your concentrates are the best.
Thank you.
I know that your process is just top notch, always dialed in. But on top of that, since you're always starting with your own flower and the best genetics, the best growing techniques with it, I honestly, there's just nothing that really compares. There's very few on the market anywhere that can compare with that.
I appreciate it. It definitely helps not, you know, just having that single source of, you know, like, we know how the plant was grown, how it was harvested, how everything was handled. There's, you know, not to take away from anyone that's doing it, like sourcing outside products. There's, you know, like Bo's Nose down in Southern Oregon.
Absolutely
makes great hash.
Happy
Cabbage does really well, you know, and like Bo's just started doing a bunch of stuff like single source, and like he's
really,
yeah, like a lot of his stuff now is single sourced. And also he's gotten relationships with just like one or two farms. So like they have their process dialed and everything. So that helps a lot. It's just something that we haven't really explored. We're hoping to expand our facilities in the coming year and everything. But like right now with like the size of the space that we're at and everything, it seems like too much of a headache to deal with other farms.
Well, one of the things I've always admired about you guys is that you, are vertically integrated. You started with yourself, and you're just doing it the smart, slow play build.
For sure. I'm sure that there's probably some other vertically integrated companies out here now, but I believe when we started this whole thing, we were the first fully vertically integrated cannabis company in the state of Oregon, from producing our own seeds to all the way to, you know, retail sales.
Yeah. It's fascinating and amazing how much name recognition you've been able to build off of the quality alone.
And you know, that's a full team of the right people at the right place.
Any shout outs to them you want to give real quick?
I mean, absolutely. Like, without Mac and Fletcher, there would be no archive here in Portland, you know. And then I have a badass team of guys at the shop now that, from Chris, damn it, Bobby, on Instagram, that does all of our hash, to Luke and Ryan, like, managing and running the whole garden. Brad and Bob, you know, doing whatever they need to do to like fill in, if it's gramming hash, if it's making sales, it's, you know, it's like the team's clicking right now.
Oh, absolutely. They're great guys too. Yeah. Every one of them.
Everyone's solid. I've known, you know, Ryan's my brother, so obviously you've known him my whole life. Luke, I've known since I've been in Oregon for 18 years now. Chris was, you know, we picked him up from another company and he brought some people along with him. And so we've just been able to get the garden team really dialed in over the last year and a half to 2 years. And, you know, like they just are badass. I have no worries that nothing's going to get done. You know, it's like everything gets done exactly how it's supposed to every day.
I can't ask for more than that.
Yeah.
So you said that you guys were some of the first that had rosin in Oregon back in the medical days.
Back in the medical days, for sure. Like, it was our lemon peel. Like, our one star was, like, what we were doing. Because those lemon terps aren't, like, Jack lemon terps. It's, like, true lemon. And so, yeah, we had rosin back then. It wasn't as refined as of a process as it is now. But, you know, that was 2016 when we had rosin on the shelves at our store. And then there was like a few years where we didn't have a processing license at that point, once it all went recreational.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a big help to add that SKU to the lineup once we got the rosin going.
Have you ever experimented with any shatters or anything?
I mean, back in the day, like, we used to make, like, just blast tubes of BHO, you know, like, in the medical days. But, no, that's not something that we have done as a, as Archive, as a company, under the legal market.
Do you have a preference for rosins or shatters and batters, any of those?
I mean, to me, it's a consistency thing.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, shatter, I feel, is just, it's hard to deal with, you know, it gets everywhere.
Agreed.
If it's me, I'm either smoking, like, cold cured rosin, just because I like that soft consistency that's really easy to deal with, or just straight bubble hash.
You don't do any batters then at all?
No. The only thing, we cold cure all of our hash just for that consistency that we all enjoy. Yeah. So no fresh press or anything like that. We are working on, you know, bringing some new things to the market in the next coming months, as far as just like first pull 90U full melt and first pull 90U rosin.
Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, so basically when we make rosin now, it's everything. We wash everything through different micron bags, you know, and so normally the 90U first pull, that's like the creme de la crop there, you know. And so before we were mixing that in with all of our 90U, like, so that was just kind of, it kind of got lost in the sauce, if you know what I'm saying. And so now what we're doing is we're keeping that out. And there's not an abundance of it, but, you know, we're going to separate that so you can have, like, the quality rosin that you're used to, but then really the kind of isolating that next, like, higher up stage of hash that hopefully people are into.
I'm definitely looking forward to trying it out. So what other kinds of products are you planning on introducing?
We got rosin carts on the way.
Really?
That's something we've been messing around with, and we were doing edibles there for a little bit with a white label company that was making our edibles and stuff, and just that didn't really like pan out the way we wanted to, just kind of like a quality control thing.
You guys are so on top of your quality.
It's just like, not that they did a bad job by any means. Yeah. It just wasn't what I wanted at that point. And so we kind of got rid of that partnership and whatnot. So we're still going to work on our edible thing in the near future. Rosin carts with some more of the 70U hash that we have just sitting there.
Now, do you have to add anything to those cartridges?
No.
It's
just a heat process you know, like, once it gets to the viscous state that we need it to be for the cart. So we're playing around with it. It probably won't be our full lineup of genetics. Like, we're kind of focusing more on like the really terpene heavy things, like our lemon peel, like the sourdough, orange Tahoe, maybe some moonbow. So we're just doing a bunch of R&D right now to see what tastes the best, because that's my biggest thing. I'm like, I don't really care.
Whenever you need a beta tester,
like a shitty cart.
Yes, please. Yeah, like I said, if you need a beta tester, I'm here for you, man.
You got it.
You guys have never released anything that tasted like a shitty product, though, so I don't imagine your carts will either.
Yeah, that's, you know, the gummy thing was kind of a bummer for us, because like we spent a lot of time kind of working on the packaging, and like I had molds made in the shape of our logo, but the effects of the gummies are great. Like, you get super high from them, but it was just like the flavor of it wasn't there for me, and that was the kind of deciding factor for me to kind of pull that off the market, because I wasn't super proud of the product.
Well, and you are always thinking about the consumer. You're thinking about what they're going to want and come back for.
I mean, if you have to spend your money on something, I want you to feel like you got what you deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any other expansion plans you can share with us about stores coming out?
I mean, you know, like, it's always in the back of our mind to just create, you know, a little bit bigger footprint than where we are now. You know, like, mainly my focus is the garden side of things. So I'm trying to work on getting more lights up and a bigger facility and everything, and here in the near future.
That's what it would really take to expand the next level.
Yeah, that's, you know, like, obviously it'd be nice to have a little bit bigger store or another retail store, but I don't know if anyone's dealt with retail. It's not it's not the easiest thing to deal with, you know. You got a lot of different personalities working, customer relations, all that stuff. So if anything, we'd probably just try to expand the footprint of our store now and just keep the same location, hopefully. We're just established back in that little nook near Pick and Pull off of Foster. So,
dude, it's been there. It's a Portland, you know, icon now.
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard to find a store by the time we started looking, just because of that 1,000-foot buffer here in Multnomah County. So when we found that place, we were just like, look, we just have to work harder to make it a destination, you know, because we don't get that foot traffic that a lot of people do.
And they're so, coming. Like,
you
got to
come there for a reason if you come there.
I do know that you have products all over the state. You have partnerships with other like retail locations.
We do. So we tried to, like, as since all of COVID hit and everything, we have stopped any distribution in Multnomah County in the surrounding Portland area except for our own retail store.
That makes sense.
So we have a couple places in Salem, you know, the Truth Dispensary in Salem that does some work with this. We have a spot when we can get down there in Medford, Redwood Cannabis. We have a spot out in Pendleton, Thurs, Smoke Shop out there. And out in Ontario, we've been working with Top Crop.
Okay.
But hoping to, like, start to have enough. If we can keep scaling, then we can get those people more things. But since COVID hit, we've pretty much just been exclusive at our own store.
Wow.
Which has been great. That's the dream when we started this whole thing.
I was going
to
say.
Sell everything we make through our own store.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. Now, I know that you said you smoke a lot of flower, hash. What, do you have a preference?
I'm a flower guy.
You're flower?
Yeah.
I like joints. Is it the type of high or?
Yeah. I think it's just smoking hash is, there's a process. You got to heat something up. You got to wait. You got to clean something.
Even with my email up, you know.
I just like rolling joints. Like if I get home from work after dinner and everything, I just sit down and roll a joint.
So do you have a favorite strain to smoke on?
I mean, for the last, like, 2 years, it's just been Moonbow 112.
That's, like, Non-stop.
Like, I have that. I really like our double motorboat that we do.
That's good, yeah.
But, you know, that's for more of that, like, kind of gassy profile of things. But if you come to my house, I probably only have Moonbow 112 there. Mainly because I can't take anything due to OLCC.
So, I've noticed that if I smoke the same terpene profile too long, eventually I lose a lot of those effects.
I'd probably surprise people. I don't smoke a ton of weed.
Okay.
Like, I smoke weed every day.
I think maybe my problem is just the dabbing of it then.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I normally don't smoke weed at all before work or during work. If I'm sitting at my house watching football or drinking some beers, I smoke joints for sure, but I tried to keep my day kind of clear. It's just something that I've had to learn over the time, because, like, don't get me wrong, I'd love to wake up and smoke a joint and, like, just chill for a bit, but it doesn't work with, you know, running a business and having employees and making decisions, because I just like being clear-headed at that point. And it's like a reward when I get home, you know, like I'm done with my day, kick my feet up, roll a joint, and I'm pretty content.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
I know I tend to smoke a little bit throughout the day. I'll probably have a little bit in the morning. I try and do a sativa strain to, it's my coffee, really.
For sure.
But I do know if I have one or two hits too many, all of a sudden I lose track of my thoughts, or I just, like, something starts flowing down the line.
Now, so, if I don't have anything to do, that's a whole different story, you know, but those days are few and far between.
So, do you guys do much with your social media profiles or anything?
I probably should do more, you know. Fletch has a ton of followings under Archive Seed Bank and everything. So just, like, even with him just reposting our little stories down here and everything gains a lot of traction. But Instagram is really all I do, and I'm not very on top of it, you know. Like, mainly because I stay shadow banned on Instagram. And so, like, you know, whenever I post something, even if I go look for that hashtag, I never can find it. So,
that's, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, it's one of those things that I'm like, I need to do more with social media because it is such a driving force in today's world. But I'm older, and so, like, growing up growing weed, man, you weren't telling people that you grew weed. It wasn't like, here, check out what I'm doing type of thing.
Yes, look at my flower. Yeah. Well, you were, but just to your friends.
For sure. So, like, there for a while, I was, like, putting in a lot more time and was, like, having professional photos taken and, like, trying to, like, organize the photos properly on there, and then I just kind of lost the drive to do it, you know?
It's something some people are just like really driven to do, but it being that half a generation removed from it, I think
it's like my wife has an interior design company, and like she puts a lot of it's like her Instagram has to be, every photo has to like be in the right spot, the colors have to work together and everything. Yeah. And I, on the other hand, am just like, oh, let me throw this random video up here. And so I need to do a better job on it, for sure.
People can probably tell that my Instagram stuff for the podcast, it's all done by me.
Yeah.
I post what I think is relevant for the day, but I'm not going back through and looking at it all.
I'm just like, oh, that looks great. I took a video with my iPhone, and yep, there it is. Zero editing, no light, you know. So I could do a better job.
I think I'll have to join you on that and say I can as well. I'll see if I can't do that one of these days soon when I'm not doing it all myself.
Understandable. It's a lot, man. It's a full-time job.
It is. So outside of cannabis, do you have any other hobbies or outside interests that you kind
of take time? Really, I'd say that I spend most of my time either playing golf or I spend a lot of time on the river, or like I love the water. So okay. If I'm not playing golf in the summertime, I'm probably sitting by the pool or got my boat on the river or something like that. But I really don't have a ton of hobbies. You know, I play golf as many days in the year as I possibly can. That's kind of my escape. What is it
that drew you into golf?
I grew up playing golf.
I know, it's bigger East Coast. When I was in North Carolina, it was huge.
So, like, in the town in Virginia we grew up, we had 3 golf courses and, like, 4,000 people that lived there. It was, like, a fancy resort. And there are golf courses everywhere. So I played golf through high school. Caddied was like my first job, was like caddying at one of the nicer courses.
I can just see you in Caddyshack right now.
They had to wear the white overalls and like the 95 degree East Coast days with 95% humidity. It wasn't fun, but I enjoy the sport. I think mainly when I was younger and playing in high school, it was like, you just got to walk the golf course and no one really was checking up on you. So we had, you know, we were smoking shitty bowls and drinking beers and stuff after school. And your parents thought that, you know, you were doing some sort of activity.
Yeah. You had a job, man.
But then I just kept playing. And like, so I'm like, man, if I can get out, it's 4 or 5 hours just to like check out and be outside and walk around and hang out with some friends.
That's cool. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
From Virginia, you ended up out here. Do you have any stops in between?
Yeah, I bounced around for a little bit, for sure. You know, like I was in Colorado for a little bit. I was in Georgia, like outside of Athens for like a small amount of time. And I really moved out here to blow glass. So it was like what drew me to Oregon in the first place. I applied to go to this school in North Carolina called Penland Craft School for like their glass blowing thing, and they only accepted like 5 or 6 people. I didn't get in, so I was like, I'm just going out west. And like 2 weeks before I was getting ready to move, they called and said someone backed out and I got a position at the school, but I had already like kind of shifted, like I had an apprenticeship kind of lined up out here to come blow glass. And so I was like, yeah, whatever, I'm not doing that, I'm just moving to Oregon. And so buddy and two of my friends, we drove out here, went through a bunch of different states and everything and hung out for a while. And my friend was going to school at that point at Rochester Institute of Technology up in New York. So he had to get back to school and I was like, well, I'm just going to stay here. So I just stayed, just dropped me off kind of.
Can you see yourself having a very different career, having gone back for that glass blowing?
I mean, I feel it kind of coincides, you know?
Oh, like, absolutely. The two definitely have overlap.
Yeah, and especially now since hash has become so much popular, like, blowing glass is huge, you know?
Do you know Zach Hewson?
No.
He's around here. He's got a glass blowing place that his family's been involved in glass for a decade or more. So okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah, no. I came out here to work with some people that used to have a shop called Eugene Rain, like Matt and Misha Geiser. And I got that connection on the old like glass pipes for him back in the day through actually Marble Slinger, who just goes by Slinger now.
Okay.
You know, he was just like, oh, you should do it, you know, make the move and everything. So he was kind of influential in me, you know, kind of pushing that whole glass thing. And when I got out here, it wasn't really what I was hoping for at that point, you know? Like, I was still young. And so I don't think I was ready to completely put all of my energy into something and, like, super focus. And so it didn't really pan out. I made some glass. It was all shitty. but, like, my love for glass is still, you know, it's still pretty big for sure.
Did you keep any pieces for yourself that you made?
I've lost them or broken them all over the year. You know, it was like, I was making like oneies and little like production spoons and stuff like that. Like the only thing I have is like a handful of beads that I made when I was younger.
Well, still, you think you'll ever go back?
Probably not.
No,
you know, like it's just like so established. Like now if someone had a torch and they're like, you know, my next door neighbor or something and I could play around. Absolutely. But realistically, everyone is like the people that are established now are so good at their craft that I'm like, I'll just buy your stuff. I have a ton of friends that blow glass still. So, my collections all from friends.
So, even for fun, cannabis is where you're at.
Absolutely. It takes up a big part of my life, like mainly because I feel there's always room for improvement. So it's just like understanding and putting forth all my energy towards making myself feel that I'm doing the best job that I can on any of that thing, on anything I do. And so just understanding how to grow weed better and better and better. I mean, you'd think that I would have a firm grasp, but then it's like I'd make certain changes and then all of a sudden it's like, man, I was doing this completely wrong. Like,
that really just surprises me to hear from you because I've seen your quality for so long.
Well, I mean, I think anyone that says that they're not learning, you know, is kidding themselves because it's like you can do the same thing every day and get the same results, and that's great. But I've yet to see any single person on the face of the earth grow the best weed on the face of the earth. Like, everyone has problems in your garden. Things arise, you know, it's like, this run wasn't as good as the last one or something. So it's like, for me, it's all about figuring out that consistency to where, like, you know, everything is clicking the same way every single time.
Well, and you're working with a different strain. They take up a nutrient differently that you have to roll with, something like that.
Everything changes. The media pH, the humidity, temperature, your shots of water and food that you're giving them, you know, cutting out certain things at certain points, like, so really just kind of understanding more and more about the plant.
Well, you definitely have an attention for detail, that's for sure.
Thank you. Sometimes it's neurotic, maybe. But.
I feel you on that sometimes as well. So you said you had a stop out in Colorado. And if I remember right, we've had a conversation where you have another podcast connection out there, don't you?
I don't know.
I was thinking Up and Vanished.
Oh, yeah. Up and Vanished, for sure. I was like, which is crazy. Like, I went to Crested Butte, Colorado, the year after I graduated just for the winter. And I had a good buddy that stayed out there. And it just so happens, I mean, I met my wife years and years later from all of this. But she ended up going to school at Western in Gunnison as well, and so like kind of brought that whole Crested Butte thing back, you know, full circle there. But yeah, she went to school with Crystal. There was freshmen at Western and everything, like lived on the same hall and whatnot. So it's kind of crazy.
For people who haven't listened yet, I highly recommend Up and Vanished. Was that the first season?
It was the second season.
Second season Crystal yeah. was on.
Yep, it was the second season. It's a great podcast for sure, you yeah. know. I think the first one was about a lady in Georgia.
Georgia, that's right.
Yeah, she's a school teacher. And yeah. then, yeah, and then the second season was all about Crystal and everything. So, yeah, that one, that was pretty wild. Like, just like, because I listened to the podcast and started talking about it, and I was like, oh, this just started connecting the dots. And I was like, Claire, do you know this girl? She's like, yeah, why? And I was like, she's like, I was in dorms with her. And I was like, oh, there's a whole podcast about her disappearance. And so, yeah. like, she didn't even know or anything like that. Cause,
yeah, you lose touch. It's yeah, college.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was years and years ago by now.
Well, and that's one where I think they have a fairly firm idea of what's going on if you listen through the end of that one.
For sure. I think that they have, you know, there's some definite suspects in that, but
I don't like to I go with the whole innocent till proven guilty thing, but there are some people that are trying to dig themselves a pretty deep hole.
Absolutely. It's you gotta follow your leads at that point, and like when all the fingers are pointing in one direction, you kind of have to go there.
Craziness. You have any other podcasts you listen to regularly?
I would say the one I listen to the most is Sword and Scale.
Sword and Scale. I don't know that one.
It's just another like true crime kind of podcast thing, but they've been doing it like they started like before Serial even came out and stuff. They've in like season 7 or 8 or something, like almost 200 episodes.
Wow.
But kind of the same thing, you know, like stories about fucked up people.
I did listen to Serial. I listened to My Favorite Murder, of course. Yeah. That one's more comedy, though, not as in depth.
I listen to weed podcasts every now and then, you know, like, what is the podcast? The podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. There was so I just listened to Dead and Gone.
Okay.
Which is Payne Lindsay as well.
Yeah, and I thought that one sounded like familiar.
About like some people that were murdered, part of like Grateful Dead family and stuff. Because
I did listen to that one. There's I'm like a big 10 Grateful Dead fan.
Yeah. So yeah.
Noticed on your shirt there.
So yeah, so that one was pretty good to me. You know, pretty good. It was short and everything. So I kind of was left open ended. But kind of the same thing. There's
a lot of fingers pointing in
directions. Going in one direction, you know. Yeah. Pretty obvious when you're not willing to like talk about what happened, that something happened you don't want to talk about.
That we can agree on. He doesn't want to talk about something.
It's like, you probably did something you shouldn't have.
I like the Grateful Dead community itself. They're tight-knit in a very unique way.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's kind of what that whole podcast plays on, you know, is it is the Grateful Dead community. And there's so many like little different groups of that as well. And
I think that's like, it actually has some overlap with the true crime community for sure.
Yeah. So like, I think that Dead and Gone podcast, that's why it works so well. Cause it absolutely. Was like, this is, you have like two stories. You have like this whole Grateful Dead side of things, you know, and like the family and the community side of it. And then you have this like murder that was involved with, you know, within part of that group. So that was a good one.
Well, as we're getting a little bit farther into this, I appreciate you being out here with me.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything you wish you had known 10 years ago?
Oh man, there's so many things. Like, I wish I would have just kind of like focused a little bit more on understanding the plant and thinking that, like, you know, oh, I'm growing weed and you just add this and this and you get this final product, you know, and like actually spent a little more time in, you know, spending time like understanding why certain things happen and like why, you know, this dryback periods and this, you know, I see big faster growth and all these things. And really, I guess mainly the biggest thing right now is business. Like, I wish I would have just like had some sort of business understanding and like understanding of like how to structure things and taxes. And
so you weren't doing it all from scratch.
Yeah. You know, all sorts of things from managing people, you know, like back then I was just, listening to a bunch of fish and growing weed and, you know, living life. I never thought that we'd be running a company that has 15 employees all set, you know, on both sides of it and dealing with things like that. So I kind of wish I would have focused a little bit more on business side of things and just a little, you know, instead of just partying all the time.
Do you feel like you've gotten a fairly good grasp on it at this point, though? It seems like you do.
I think that every day I'm still learning, you know, and like it's kind of the same thing with as hiring employees, you know, getting the right people in the right places. So having the right, you know, the right accountants, the right attorneys, you know, having like some sort of like business mentor that you can like run ideas by and things like that. So, yeah, I feel like I'm getting a bigger grasp on it, but then, you know, everything's ever changing, you know, especially being in Multnomah County where we get new taxes thrown on top of us every, you know, election year and everything. So it's like, if I had to say one thing, it would say a little bit firmer grasp on how to run a business.
So what do you think's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome this last year? Since probably not COVID in your guys' case.
Not really COVID. And like the last year has been, I mean, I know this, like I kind of hate to say it, but the last year's been pretty smooth for us, you know, like.
So because of everybody else's COVID restrictions, you've actually got to run.
We've seen growth across the board, you know, because like at this, you took away restaurants, you took away bars, you take away all this stuff from people, but you can still smoke weed.
Yeah.
I have to believe that some of those funds are being diverted into, you know, getting stoned, because what else can you do?
I went to a few restaurants outside, you know, undercovers. Like,
that's not as enjoyable as sitting inside, you know.
No.
Having cocktails and chatting with your friends.
And it's fucking January. I'm sorry, it's 40 degrees outside right now.
It's pretty chilly.
If you guys have been growing, is there anything that you've had to overcome as a business in the last?
I mean, from anyone that's been in Oregon and seen the like beginning of recreational cannabis, you know that it was just, there was a million people, a million stores, a million producers. And so there was just the like overproduction of everything, you know?
Do you think that's actually starting to resolve itself?
I think that it kind of is, but at the same time, a lot of people I know tried to start upscaling because of the demand for product right now. And so I think if we're not careful, we're going to fall right back into it.
There were huge swings in prices, even for, you know, top notch indoor flower you could get for $1,000 or a pound at one point.
Yeah. Absolutely. Prices have definitely gone up for sure, you know.
Stabilized again?
They're pretty stable at the moment, at least on our end, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that you have a bunch of different tiers of production, and so I think some of those are a little more volatile, where some of the upper brands that have established themselves have kind of just been like, look, this is what it costs.
You have a fixed environment that you're working with all the time. You're not dealing with, you know, a giant outdoor crop or something like that.
That's not, you know, that market never really necessarily affects what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The stores that are moving through tons of outdoor weed at, you know, pennies on the dollar, we don't sell to. Not saying that, like, we're better or anything like that. That's just not your market.
Yeah.
And so for us, it's just we've been able to kind of, With the launch of the hash company and like dialing in our flower production and everything, kind of just met, like it made our, it cemented our place in where we need to be, where outdoor crops, you never know. It could be good. It could be horrible that year. And so it's, that part never really affected us. And then you have like the indoor production people that have tons of lights and maybe they don't have like the quality of, you know, what some people are looking for, so they can afford to be that kind of middle tier that does well, you know. I think that's the beauty about cannabis, is there's a spot on the shelf for like every type of weed, you know. Like,
absolutely,
people that don't have $80 to spend on a gram of hash can easily go and buy, you know, a $25 gram and get just as stoned.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of nice that we were able to kind of get our little niche that plays works out for us, and still all these other people can do what they need to do to eat as well.
I think that you guys have just been so focused on your employees and the growth as the company and just making sure things are all right. I just really like that. Small business mentality done the right way.
For sure. You know, like when I first started the garden, I just hired some friends that were, you know, I was like, I'll try to help you out. We'll do this. And it didn't really work out. Their passion, they weren't, the drive wasn't there to be where we wanted to be. And it showed early on. And so like once we were able to get the right people in the right places, it was just like, all right, we're not walking anymore. This is a full sprint on until we pass out.
Well, you guys are still sprinting.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We're definitely not letting up. That's for sure. You know, like a kind of tie back in, just trying to improve all those small little details that we necessarily weren't seeing before. And now we see them like on a giant television screen graph every single day. So we're working on dialing in all those little things.
Well, before we get to, I always like to try and end with a moment of vulnerability segment I have on here. Always fun, let me tell you. Is there anything else that I should have asked but I didn't think to ask?
I mean, I think that pretty much covers like the basics of like where we're at and how Archive kind of got to be where we are today. You know, like, and I can't thank Mac at the retail store enough for like curating the store the way he does, and you know, driving that demand there and everything. Without him, Archive Oregon would still be kind of, you know, who knows where it'd be. It wouldn't be as recognizable because there's no face to the name, you know. It's like the store has, from our clone selections to like just the flower that's on the shelf, you know that if it's there, it's something that we're going to consume. And we put a lot of our pride or whatever you want to say into just knowing that like if we're selling it at the store, we would use it.
Yeah, it's a product I would want.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so big question. What motivates you in life?
I would say probably failure. You know, really? like the not failing, I guess, you know,
that more fear so. Of failure
The fear of failing, losing what we've built, you know, I guess is a big thing. So it's like, for me, it's like you can't let your foot off the gas, because the minute you do, someone else is going to, you know, they're going to drive past you. And so I think that to me, that's the biggest thing is like, I can't say that I had a ton growing up and that life was super easy when I moved to the West Coast. And so it's taken me forever to kind of build this whole thing. And so like the thought of just losing it by like the slightest amount just keeps me motivated every day to wake up and keep grinding.
It seems that fear actually pushes you. You don't let it hold you back.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, I wouldn't say that it's, you know, like I'm not scared of it by any means. You know, I just know that it's something that I never want to see. I don't want to lose anything that we've done. And so it's just, I know that as a person, I can do something better every single day.
So is it like things like that brought you into the rosin market, knowing that, you know, this was getting more popular, people were talking about this, your quality was already there?
It really what got us into that was we were just like, it was kind of when weed sales were kind of just, you know, they were kind of flat at that point. And so for us, we were like, look, we know we have good weed. If we had a different SKU that, you know, a different product that shows, you know, like, hey, look. And so that really just kind of opened up the window, because we were able to put hash in stores and they're like, oh, well, if your hash is like this, then let's check out your flower. And so that kind of started some of those things. But for us, it was really just kind of diversifying what we had.
So is there any specific game-changing moment in your life?
I mean, there's definitely been some things that have shifted, you know, like that have really changed. Like I moved to Mendo, for a while, 2005, and kind of just saw like a lot larger, outdoor production of marijuana at that point, and kind of was just like, huh, this is way cooler than my closet. And so that kind of just started pushing me towards that. And then when I moved back to Oregon, excuse me, I was here for like a year, and then I got my first warehouse in Portland. So it was just like, that was 2011. And so I was just like, those were kind of game changing things. And then I did get in a little bit of trouble in LA.
Really?
Shortly after that.
Care to share?
I just had a bunch of weed and hash, and they told me I wasn't supposed to. So that was like a year of my life that I went through court and all sorts of things. I like sold everything I had to like beat this case. So that was kind of that was like a eye-opening experience, and
made sure you were doing business the right way up here. Because of that, I'm assuming.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like I learned some pretty hard lessons at that point as well. Not that I hadn't had hard times before, but that one was kind of tough. And but that's really everything else just kind of been maturing and growing up, you know, like getting to a point where it's like I can't live the life that I was and try to run a business, because I'm like, I'm not giving 100% to this. And now that I have employees, if I'm not giving them 100%, how can I expect them to give me 100%? So it was just really tight, you know, growing up and stop doing dumb things that I was doing.
Do you have a proudest moment, either personally or professionally?
I mean, I think like every day that like we continue to grow the company here in Oregon is just like every day I'm like more and more proud of like the team we've established, the work that we've put in, the recognition that we're getting. You know, like I guess like the professionally, like when we started the hash company, we were invited down to California in 2019 for the Ego Clash. It was like 125 people from all around the country, just hash makers. It was the first year that we had really like kind of put a lot of focus into it, and we won best hash, not rosin, but like best just like actual melt. And so that was kind of cool, because it was like, okay, there's a little bit of recognition. It's like a select group of people. Not that I put a ton of value in trophies or awards like that, but it was kind of cool because we had just started to establish that, like the team that we have now.
Well, and it gives you a little bit of, it's just that recognition of the work you're putting into the product.
Yeah, I think that was the big thing, because it was like, look, we know we've been doing a really good job at this for a while. And then to kind of just take what we had been doing and started making it into another product, and just seeing that little bit of recognition, it was cool. You know, like I was absolutely in Vegas for MJ Biz, and Chris, the guy who makes our hash for us, was like, I called him, or he called me, I don't remember. It was like, I was getting on a flight, and he was like, how's first place sound? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, we won. And I was like, are you kidding me? And so that, yeah, it was kind of cool, you know? So it was great for him as well, because he'd been making hash for only a few years, and so we were able to kind of combine forces and springboard his career and help ours at the same time.
I love it. All right, last big one. You have any personal philosophy on life?
Personal philosophies on life. I think the most important thing that people get caught up in is worrying about other people. And so, like, for me, it's just, like, minding my own business, you know, like not getting caught up in the social media dramas and, you know, focus on your craft, whatever it is. If it's, you know, pouring concrete, if it's growing weed, just, like, work as hard as you can for yourself. I don't really know if that's a personal philosophy or anything, but it's just staying out of all the shit that is going on everywhere, and just keeping your head down and focused.
Do the best job that you can do, and do it for yourself.
Do it for yourself. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're not happy with yourself, you're not happy with anybody. And so to me, it's, you know, like when you go home at night, if it's, you're the best janitor that there can be, you know, and you can hang your hat on it. It's like that to me, self-worth and like pride and everything. Cause the minute you start worrying about everyone else, nothing pans out.
I love it.
can't think of a better way to end. Any last words or personal shout outs you want to say?
I mean, thanks to every single person that has stuck through all the, you know, good times and the bad times, mainly my wife. You know, she's dealt with a lot of shit, from getting in trouble to putting all of my money into doing this business to
everything. How many years has she been putting up with you now?
We've been together for 11. We've been married for a year, a little under a year. So, she's dealt with a lot. And then, you know, I probably wouldn't be here if she wouldn't have been by my side. My team at the garden again, absolutely. Mac and Fletcher, and just, you know, I mean, my parents, from just dealing with my kind of crazy lifestyle, they've always been super supportive of it and everything. And, you know, it's just, I'm super grateful and I'm super lucky to have the people in my life that I do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to it.
All right, look forward to having you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I had a blast talking about Archive and the Cannabis Revolution with Adam. I want to thank him and also give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube or wherever else you're listening, and please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Every podcast says it because it really does help with visibility. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.